Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to a bonus edition of the Terra Scotch Football Podcast. My name is Duncan Mackay and today I am joined by two people who are quite frankly sensational. It is Robert Borthwick.
Oh my God, what incredible. Thank you, Duncan.
I'm too negative about Hibs, so I'm going to just be positive about everything else I can.
Love that. Thank you very much.
And Andy Harrow.
Hi Duncan, how are you doing?
I'm smashing. We are mere hours away from, well, I mean, we're always hours away from something, but we are mere countable hours away from the start of the Scottish Premiership season. How are we feeling about it? Are we excited?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll fill the gap that we created there. Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I think there's a lot of interest in storylines about this season, and I guess we'll get to some of them. But last season was quite a bad one in terms of the Premiership. In terms of the quality, it was poor. And from, you know, I was obviously paying more attention to the Championship last season, but I didn't especially enjoy last year particularly. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this one though. I've got a renewed sense of optimism about it.
I think it was quite nervy last season as well, for lots of COVID related reasons. Like, you know, it wasn't quite back to normal quite yet, and then we had a bit of a stop start, so fingers crossed this is just full-blooded hatred and nonsense that we come to love and expect. So as we normally do around this time of the season, just as a preview, Fowler sent down the message from on high from his mansion in near Sockton. I'll not reveal too much, and it's not Sockton Prison, by the way. We've got a question about each team in the Premiership as a kind of a kickoff for what things might happen to that club during the year, and so we're going to try and answer them. So we'll go reverse alphabetical order, because we almost always go alphabetical order. So we're going to kick off with St Mirren. Here's my question to you: is the bigger concern for St Mirren this season not Stephen Robinson but Keith Lasley? Who's going to Rob? Do you want to kick us off with that?
Yeah, man, the issue is Stephen Robinson. if we're just going to dive straight in there, like ever since that Morecambe club car was spotted in Paisley when he was on his way up to sign the deal last season, I think alarm bells were ringing. They did not do well at all at the tail end of last season under Stephen Robinson. I think that, you know, immediately he came in and said, you know, I've overtaken a squad in a good place. Jim Goodwin's done a good job. And then he lost three games on the bounce and he said, nah, you know what, this squad's not good enough. And it's like, well, that's an issue in itself, because you're kind of going back on what you said. And using Duncan Mackay's sort of timing metric hours ago. So I think that, you know, it's an issue. And you look at the fact that obviously Keith Lasley now, obviously he's the high heed at St Mirren, and you're looking at the signing policy being essentially just former players that played under Stephen Robinson at Motherwell. But at the same time, you know, it's the manager that has to put that squad together, that has to put the time in to get players playing in a specific and certain way. And I think that, you know, with the way the Premier Sports Cup has gone for them, i.e. catastrophically, you know, it doesn't bode well at all for a new season. You look at signs like Declan Gallagher, and you know, my two least favourite words in football, on paper, he is a decent signing, but he's suffered terribly at Aberdeen. He's dropped so far off the Scotland national team spectrum that I don't think he'll ever even get a whisper of a call-up again. He's coming into a St Mirren team. Obviously, he's coming into a manager that he knows, but it doesn't mean that it's going to work out. And I think that there's just a bit of a... Yeah, there's pure feeling at St Mirren just now. And there's a team that we're going to get onto literally next that I think might save their behinds this season. But St Mirren is not looking great. But on the flip side of it, you know, I like what I've seen, albeit on my scout and YouTube, of Keanu Backus, who came in from Western Sydney Wanderers. You know, I think that they have signed some decent players to come in and make a difference. But to answer your question, the issue is going to be Stephen Robinson. And if we're looking for a sack race this season, then I'd put him pretty near the front of it.
Yeah, I think I picked him in the predictions that Gary did. I'll have to go and double check, but I'm pretty sure Stephen Robinson's the one I've got. I agree with Rob that he's the issue, I think, in terms of, for all the reasons that Rob explained that I'll not repeat. From Keith Lasley's perspective, I think the thing you could argue about him is that he's going to make mistakes as a director of football. He's, you know, he's done his master's degree as a sporting director, effectively. He does have, in theory, an understanding of kind of what fan ownership is like and how that has worked well at Motherwell and how he can kind of develop that at St Mirren. And there's been some sort of positive chat over the last few days around him talking to different fan groups and putting some initiatives together to help people within the community, which is really good. And hopefully that continues. From the footballing perspective side of things, that's a big jump up. You know, from football player to manager is a big step, because there's all these different things that you're working with, but you're still effectively working with football players and you're working within a sphere that you understand. As soon as you go into the sort of chief executive director type role, that's a whole another level of things that that can cause problems. Like, I've been watching, for whatever reason, lots of old Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares at the moment. lots of old American Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. And the one of the big problems that almost everyone comes up with in that is that they've gone from being like a maybe a chef, but they've maybe gone from being a mechanic to running a kitchen. And then they just fundamentally don't understand all the ins and outs of what needs, you know, the stock isn't ever replenished properly, or they've got too much of it. They don't really know how to deal with staff. Like, there's so many different things that they need to do that they have no real understanding of. So they made lots of mistakes. And I think that's the danger that might happen with Keith Lasley, is that he is going to make mistakes in that role. You would hope, in theory, because he's got an experienced manager alongside him, that is mitigated somewhat. But given the problems that we've got around Robinson and the concerns, you could see him having to kind of very quickly pick a new manager, which again is fraught for even more reasons.
So, sacking your mate is probably not an easy thing to do, especially when the dynamics were previously that Lasley was his assistant manager, wasn't he? So, but yeah, I was fortunate enough, if you're minded that way, to see Airdrie beat St Mirren in the Premier Sports League Cup, and they absolutely deserved their 2-0 win. Like, they were just significantly better by them by a mile, and that's a League One side even. And it was interesting because both teams want to play out from the back, and it was noticeable how much a part-time trio of Rhys McCabe and Craig Watson and the final player were better than Charles Dunn and Declan Gallagher. So I don't think that particularly augurs well, but I think speaking of bad vibes, let's keep that running as we go to the next next team, St Johnstone. The question is, what would it take for Callum Davidson to be sacked? Andy, what's your thoughts on that?
That's a big question, isn't it?
Because they generally don't do sackings, do they?
No, no. And I mean, you would have... Really, you think that the point that any other club would have sacked him would have happened by now. I think I said in a previous Patreon podcast that in some senses I could understand why they've held off sacking him at previous stages, and the fact that they stayed up last season. You've gone this far, do you see how it goes over the summer? But the Premier Sports Cup was dismal. And for me, I was looking at the fixture list and who they've got, and I think there's a... you've maybe got, I think, five or six games where you're... If they don't get a few results, if they don't get maybe two or three wins out of that, then you're beginning to... I think you've got to pull the trigger, because the situation that you don't want is... You don't want to get separated at the bottom, because there's not a lot of good teams in the league, as we've talked about from last season, but it is possible to get detached. I think St Johnstone are our candidates for being detached. There might be, you know, like we've talked about St Mirren or someone else, but if you look at their first six games, they've got Hibs at home, then it's away to Motherwell, and then away to Rangers, home to Aberdeen, away to Hearts, and home to St Mirren, which isn't a especially easy fixture list to start with. You'd maybe have hoped for Motherwell at home, and at least you've got St Mirren at home. I think if they've got to the point of the 3rd of September and they lose to St Mirren at home and haven't taken very much from the previous games, that's probably the point that they'll sack him. I think they'll give him a chunk of matches, unless they get absolutely embarrassed in the next few. I think they'll give him a chunk of matches because they've lasted this long with him. But yeah, I think that he's totally on borrowed time at this stage, because there doesn't look any... They don't look like they're going to get out of this rut anytime soon, basically.
Rob, will this season end up with Hearts actually getting a win at McDermott Park, given how awful St Johnstone are shaping up to be?
Oh, there's absolutely no chance. No, St Johnstone will finish the season with 6 points, both of those wins at McDermott Park against Hearts. But I think, I just find it bizarre that the entire way that St Johnstone have gone about their business since the tail end of last season, you know, they're basically their one elderly signing away from getting Zimmer Frames as their new sleeve sponsor. It's just... The age and the experience, I suppose, if you want to call it that, the players that Davidson's bringing in, you can see why he's doing it. You know, guys that know the league, you've got your Ryan McGowans, your Jamie Murphys, your Andy Considines. But at the same time, you know, you need a fresh injection of life into that St Johnstone team that was just flaccid for so much of last season. And I think that, you know, Andy is talking about the fixture list. And I think that, you know, in a league the size of the Scottish Premiership, fixture lists shouldn't... I don't think they count too much towards anything, really, because you're going to be playing the same 11 teams, you know, 3-4 times a season. But I think you've got to be looking, from St Johnstone's point of view, with the Premier Sports Cup ending up the way it did, you're looking at that first international break and you're saying, right, where are St Johnstone when it comes to that? So that's going to be, what, mid-September or so. And I think that when you look at where St Johnstone are then, that's when the St Johnstone board, I think, have decisions to make. Do you say, right, okay, plough forward, we see what we can do in the winter window, or do you say we give someone some time before the winter window to then get an idea of what we need to actually keep this side in the Premiership next season? It's not a good situation to be in. He obviously has endless amounts of credit in the bank for that unprecedented cup double, but that runs out, and I think that has run out now, to be honest. It's all about the business for St Johnstone now, and they need to win games. They need to start well enough that they're not anchored to the bottom of the table when it comes to that first international break, because I think that'll be a really telling moment in their season.
Well, after you and after various members of A View from the Terrace tipped St Johnstone on the BBC's website today to be good, almost unanimously, I think, to go down, I think it's clear that they'll probably end up sixth or whatever. But we'll move now to North to Dingwall. Quite a simple one, this. Rob, can you explain... why Ross Laidlaw is still number one goalkeeping choice for Ross County this season?
I'm beginning to feel like it is literally impossible to lure goalkeepers any further north than like Aberdeen or something. And that's why they've still got Ross Laidlaw between the sticks going into a new season. Listen, he's done okay for them in the past. I think he's not a safe set of hands, but he's certainly a known set of hands, if that means anything.
High praise.
He has hands. Yes, he has hands. I can confirm.
He does have hands. I mean, yeah, it's a weird one, man. They brought in Jake Eastwood from Sheffield United. Whether he is going to be the one to make any sort of difference to, or make any sort of challenge to Ross Laidlaw, I mean, as it stands, it doesn't seem to be that will be the case. It's a weird one, man. But I think that once you've got that experience, you know, sort of between the sticks, and obviously having that guy that knows the defence and knows the team as well as he does, you know, that can make a difference. But it's just bizarre that, you know, he's one of the weaker, if not the weakest, goalkeeper in the top flight. And I think that looking at Ross County and how well they did towards the end of last season, you'd think that strengthening where they need to strengthen was going to be key for them to really make a run at the top six and try and get European football. Because the way they finished the season, that's how they should be thinking. And yeah, it feels like a misstep for now, but at the same time, there's still a month left of the window. You never know what will happen. But yeah, I think for outsiders, and certainly for us Terrace Podcast boys who like to see Ross Laidlaw as a whipping boy, it's definitely a weird one going into a new campaign.
Andy, yeah, when you watched Ross Laidlaw between the sticks at Starks Park, did you envisage several years later that he would be an established Premiership goalkeeper?
I was just going to say that couldn't have been further from my thinking there, that he would be a multiple season Premiership starter. Because he was always dropping. He dropped some clangers then. He didn't look confident. And I don't really get the feeling that he's ever massively improved. He's not a bad shot stopper, but he does make mistakes. And I think looking at Jay Eastwood, who they've brought in, I mean, he was at three different clubs last season, and he played like one or two games between the three of them. He dropped down the leagues. He went from Sheffield United to Portsmouth in League One, and then Rochdale in League Two, and didn't play for any of them, which doesn't bode well. And he's not really played much over the last few seasons at all. So he feels like he's been brought in as a backup. But who knows? He'll maybe replace Laidlaw when Malcolm McKay finally gets fed up with him. But I mean, fair play. I mean, he must either be like a great guy in the dressing room, or just a really top pro to still be there. And like Rob said, there's probably an element of it where they can't actually bring in any decent goalkeepers up to the Highlands either. They do have a pretty settled backline in front of them, which is maybe part of the thinking too as well, where they've got three of the four back four retained, and that maybe between having them and Laidlaw, you don't want to chuck out all that work and all that way that each other knows how to play potentially. But I'm kind of grasping at straws a wee bit, to be honest, Duncan.
No, I think that makes sense. We now move to last year's runners-up in the league. Rangers, of course, if you didn't know that. Is anything less than the title a failure for Giovanni van Bronckhorst? That's me saying that, thinking that it's unlikely that they'll reach a European final again. But Andy, do you want to kick us off on that one?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting this year because I think last year when we went into it, the expectation was that Rangers would win the league and that Celtic were going to be in some sort of potential multi-year transition phase where they got a new manager in who nobody knew anything about and might be bad, and even if he was good, he had to unpick all of this mess from Neil Lennon, and actually obviously came in and was excellent basically straight off the bat. So it's kind of felt like we're at a point where Rangers have kind of been gradually, slowly building and developing their team and improving it where they can, and obviously spent a bit of money this summer as well to further develop it. They've managed to keep a few key players at the club, like Goldson and Tavernier. So on paper, you'd think, you know, we're maybe at this point we're maybe into kind of multiple consecutive title wins for Rangers, and if you know Postecoglou hadn't come in and had such a big impact, because Rangers squad on paper looks like they could win the league. And I guess to answer the question, yes, it'll be a disappointment that they don't win the league, because it's always really a disappointment or a failure for Rangers and Celtic if they don't win the league. But this year is slightly different to say last year, where last year was a disappointment because they were the big favourites. This year, I think Celtic are the slight favourites for it. Which makes a difference. I don't know if I'm obviously not a Rangers fan, so I probably think about it slightly differently. I don't know if that slightly tempers the expectations for it, and that if they can maybe win a cup here and there, or they can have a good European run while also putting in a good challenge, whether that that's enough. Probably not, but I think I imagine maybe expectations are slightly down on last season. The question for me is maybe more whether or not it looks like Van Bronckhorst is a long-term plan as manager, and if they see signs of that. I don't think there was a lot of signs in the league last year of that. Obviously, was some in Europe, but for me, that's the kind of key thing. If it looks like he's improving as a manager, and it looks like Rangers have got better domestically, then maybe for next season again, you're thinking, well, we've got somebody in place, and we've still got a structure. Otherwise, the potential is that you're chucking it all away again at the end of this summer. But it's going to be certainly more interesting on paper, I think, this year than it looked at this time last season.
I think, as Fowler pointed out with when he spoke to Adam for in the Patreon preview pods, which I would thoroughly recommend you subscribing to if you want to get some good insights on every Premiership club this season, is that this is the first time in many a season where both teams are going into the season on an even keel, that there's been an element of stability to both clubs, and that I suspect that actually I think it will be more about performance levels as well, that if they keep the league tight and it comes down to Old Firm games and the cup competitions where they meet each other, if there is if that's pretty even as well, but you know, if you lose the league by a point or two, then I don't think it'll go down as a complete failure if you've also won a cup and beat Celtic a couple of times. But Rob, you're a Glasgow resident. What are you picking up on the mean streets of Scotland's second city?
It would 100% be a failure if Rangers didn't win the league, much like Andy said, because any time they don't win the league, it is considered a failure, especially in the last couple of years. They were saved a bit last season by the fact they got to a European final. I don't think they'll do that again. I mean, you never know, never say never, but I doubt they'll have that to fall back on. And obviously, you know, that helped with the sort of inter-city relations between Rangers and Celtic. Celtic shiting themselves that Rangers might win a European title, and Rangers really sort of making sure that Celtic weren't able to celebrate their title win until right at the end of the season. So I think that, of course, it would be seen as a failure. I think what's interesting with Rangers is the signings that they've made. They're obviously spending money, but the guys they're signing are either in their peak years or young guys who obviously have a high ceiling. So you've got like Ridvan Yilmaz, Rabi Matondo, guys like this who are young players, but they're spending money. They're putting the outlay there. Malik Tillman, coming in. And I think that it'll be interesting to see what Rangers do next season in terms of bleeding these younger guys in, or whether they're going to go straight into the first team, whether they're going to be relied upon more in European football that they've come from, obviously more used to that, and how they're going to look domestically. Obviously, they've signed John Souter, well-known face in the league. They brought in Ben Davis. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the thought process is, because it looks to me like they've made up a signing policy that essentially gives them strength both in Europe and in the league this time. And I think that's maybe where they struggled a bit last season in terms of getting players firing on all fronts. So, yeah, it would be a failure, but I would say that Celtic are favourites because they've just won it. But I think the signings that Rangers have made and the way that they are building up to this season, I would be quite happy and quite, you know, sort of encouraged if I was a Rangers fan.
All right, we go to Lanarkshire next. Motherwell, when he eventually leaves, which could be very soon given that we're recording this before their match against the second leg against Sligo Rovers, but will if Graham Alexander leaves, will his reign be considered genre-defining? Rob, what do you think about that?
It will certainly be unsurpassed, is what I would say. Listen, what's the genre? that's the first thing to understand when it comes to talking about Graham Alexander's Motherwell. Obviously, the hope is always for Murderwell, all this shite that comes out from Motherwell fans all the time. Oh, we're big and we'll kick you, and that makes us fun. It's not fun. It's not fun to watch. And, you know, the fact you got into European football this season at all sort of makes me feel slightly queasy, given the fact that you did not win a single game basically between like Christmas and the end of the season. So, yeah, listen, I think that fair play to Motherwell for getting to where they did last season, but I wouldn't describe Graham Alexander's reign as manager as genre-defining. I feel like he's got a... Yeah, he's got a task on his hands finding a genre to even place Motherwell in under his tutelage. But I would say that, obviously, we would miss him getting yellow and red carded every single week if he was to depart. If that's a genre in itself, then fair play to him.
Yeah, an intense aura could potentially be a genre. But, Andy, do you see anything other than Graham Alexander being ejected from the Fir Park manager's seat this season?
No, the vibe is very much... I'm about three games away from getting the boot at all times, I think, with Graham Alexander. And it certainly seems like that from Motherwell fans as well. So, no, it's not impossible that they could resurrect things, obviously, given the small margins that you're operating in Scottish football. But, no, it doesn't look like it. I can see him. It's certainly, I think, between him and Robinson for first sack, incredibly, given that we've also got Callum Davidson in the league. But yeah, there you go.
It's Motherwell's lack of signings and the kind of the profile of them. Although Josh Morris from Salford City seems like a world class wind up merchant, so I'm very happy about his signing. But yeah, Paul McGinn and Blair Spittle don't really fit into what was previously kind of the Motherwell mould of here's a shop window for yourself sort of things, which had worked relatively well. So it just seems that things aren't all working and everyone's pulling right in the same direction there, but we'll see how that goes down. Next up, Livingston FC. So Andy, which Livingston player will have a standout season in a makeshift position? Because that's a David Martindale special.
Oh, good. Yeah, so, I don't know. What is the short answer to this. I'm going to slightly pivot from that and talk about the midfield, though, because I think that's one of the more interesting areas at Livingston this season, in that you basically have a lot of options in there and how they choose to kind of play them in a sort of 4-3-3, 4-5-1 type formation. I mean, I think if you look at, in theory, you've maybe got Omeonga and Holt as the holding midfielders, and then you've got either Nublaig and Calvez, Bambula, two of those three potentially off Anderson out wide. Would maybe be a natural way to look at that sort of midfield and wide section. But you've got people like Sean Kelly, who's done pretty well so far in the cup competitions. You've got Pittman, you've got Josh Mullen, Andrew Shinney, Obelai, who's playing centre-half just now but can obviously play holding midfield, and Montana, who's can kind of play full-back or also play through the middle. So you've potentially got a lot of different players who can play a number of positions across that midfield. So for me, it's going to be interesting to see what combination works best and how quickly they can get them to gel. You do obviously have a series of players there who played last season, and people like Nubley, who you would like to hope will kind of kick on a wee bit this year after his... was really good at Arbroath, and then I think was still decent the second half for Livingston, but didn't maybe pull up trees in quite the same way last season. And you've got a lot of kind of experienced guys in there as well, so it'll be interesting to see how they incorporate them. And for me, so that's it in terms of how they're going to do it. Who's going to have a standout season? Absolutely no idea. But more interestingly for me, how do you fit this whole group of guys who could all potentially play in two or three positions into the team effectively?
Rob, you're a Hearts fan, so you presumably are very anxious about the fact that David Martindale might turn Jamie Brandon into a world beater. Is that fair?
Genuinely, when I was looking through this, I was like, who in that Livingston squad is searching for a bit of identity? Who's searching for a place in that team? Step forward, Jamie Brandon. He's not going to get in ahead of Nicky Devlin, club captain. Obviously, he's a right back. I can see Jamie Brandon turning into like a central midfielder or something, and just, you know, becoming like decent enough, like hard tackling sort of guy. I don't think he'll ever be a wide player, but yeah, I mean, Jamie Brandon was definitely the one that stuck out to me the most. But you never know, like David Martindale could turn around and say that Isma Gonsalves is a holding midfielder and just start putting them there or something. And you know, that could easily be how that works out. Andy's already mentioned Ayo Obalai and his various different positions. He might end up as a central striker because he can get his head on the ball and he's not a bad finisher. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. David Martindale, obviously, he doesn't see footballers as positions on a football park. He sees them as people first, and then he makes his mind up on where on earth they're going to play. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I'm actually really, I said this in a previous podcast a couple of weeks ago, I'm really interested to see how Livingston go about things, because I think in forward positions, again, I'm not going to just say what Andy said, but I think in forward positions it is quite exciting seeing how Bambula gets along. Isma's come in. Bruce Anderson was a star. He was a standout for them last season. And obviously with the supporting runs of the likes of Jason Holt, Christian Montano coming from midfield. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what Martindale decides is going to be his best 11 week by week. But I think that Jamie Brandon is going to be a jack of all trades, and let's see if he ever masters any of them.
I think that's fair enough. He's going to have to do so playing in what I think is the most guff kit of them all this season. That collar is a crime against fashion, and that's saying something in Scottish football, isn't it?
It's easily the worst top, I think. Like Joe had it in some sort of nominal top 10 list he was going to do in the week, but he couldn't have been more wrong about it. It is an atrocious collar. Like, the rest of the strip kind of looks a bit cheap anyway, but you'd get away with it if it wasn't for that. Because it doesn't even work as a collar. It's that kind of weird way that they've got it where the kind of V-neck, the collar stops halfway down the V-neck. It doesn't, it's horrid. It's horrid.
Looks like something you might pick up at MacArthur Glen, ironically. I think that's maybe the stock that's gone awry. Now, back to the Premiership new boys returning Kilmarnock. Will this be the season that Ollie Shaw proves himself to be a top-flight striker? Rob, do you have strong opinions on the once-tipped best player in Europe?
All I'm going to say is Leanne Dempster was right. Okay, Leanne Dempster was right. Oliver Shaw is a generational talent that's coming up from a positive. Nah, listen, Ollie Shaw, I think, has always had, and Duncan, you'll know this better than anyone, he's always had attributes whereby you can point at him and say, there's a striker in there somewhere. You know, he's not short, but he's also not slow. His positioning's all right. He works really hard. And I think that when you look at the likes of, you know, Bruce Anderson, we just discussed him, I think you're looking at Ollie Shaw almost in a similar mould, because he can play as a support man for a main striker, or just be the main man himself. And I think, obviously, with Kyle Lafferty still at the club, I would actually push and I would suggest that Ollie Shaw might score more goals this season than Lafferty. I think he will end up as their top scorer. And I think that what he needed wasn't a stint at Ross County coming off the bench every now and then. He needed to be playing every single week. And I think that going, you know, inadvertently into the Championship with Kilmarnock has certainly helped him a lot. And I think that you look at the fact that he's banged in 4 goals in the Premier Sports Cup. And I think that a manager like Derek McInnes is going to be able to get the most out of, when you look at the top strikers in the league in comparison, a limited striker, then I would back Derek McInnes to get the best out of him. And I think that even looking at McInnes's track record with strikers throughout his time in Scotland, he's always been able to get guys scoring goals. And I think that Ollie Shaw could very easily be the next in that sort of genre of striker that Derek McInnes likes working with. But no, listen, I've got a lot of time for Ollie Shaw. I've enjoyed sort of catching up with what he's been doing, if it be on Sports Scene or if it's on My Scout or whatever. But I think he's a good striker, and I think that, you know, in a good season he'll get you 10 to 15 goals. And I think that with Kilmarnock going to be an upwardly mobile Championship winning side this season, then I think that he could be a big part of it.
My theory is that Shaw's success will depend on whether McInnes manages to get a tune out of Jordan Jones, and the idea that I think that the wingers have always been valued highly by Derek McInnes. I mean, look at Hayes and McGinn, Aberdeen and such like. So that's kind of my theory, is if Jordan Jones excels, then I think Ollie Shaw will excel. But Andy, what you saw a bit elements of Ollie Shaw last season in the Championship. Do you think he's ready for the step up?
Yeah, I agree with most of what, or all of really what Rob said. I think for me, I went back and had a look at his goals, and a lot of the goals that he scores are, is him kind of peeling off a defender, or you know, somebody kind of attacking through the middle and peeling off, or somebody coming down wide and him making a wee bit of space for himself away from the defender. So he's got that kind of intelligence. And what I think more than any position, apart from maybe goalkeeper, is you need confidence as a striker. And I think having that spell in the Championship, where he basically scored one in every two, and he scored four goals already in the League Cup this season, so he's coming into it full of confidence. He does have Lafferty to take the attention away to some degree, that Kelly, you know, assuming Lafferty is going to stay fit, Kelly don't require Shaw to be hitting goals all the time, and it might take a wee bit of time for him to kind of get up to speed in the Premiership. But yeah, I think he's a smart enough footballer, and I think he's developed enough over the last year and a half that he should be a success, and yeah, probably have a kind of Bruce Anderson-esque season this year, I think.
There we go, Bruce Anderson-esque. That's what more can you ask for? we head to the capital, where we talk to we'll talk about everyone's favourite clown college at the moment, and that's Hibernian, my team. And the question that we got is a point in a derby the best Hibs can hope for this season? Now, before Rob gets in there, and it's a form has got absolutely nothing to do with the Edinburgh derbies. They are the worst games that football can throw up, and there was nothing in my mind to suggest that that Hibs can't win a couple of them this season. But at the same time, history will prove the case that Hibs very rarely win Edinburgh derbies anyway, even when they were good. So I get a lot of Hibs fan base do base their perception of the season on how we do in derbies. I think that's pretty much a fool's errand. And if you want to know more about my depressing thoughts about Hibernian, obviously there's the Patreon preview that I did with Gary, and Gary just wound me up basically, and I went off on a rant for about 20 minutes. But Rob, how are you feeling about your City rivals this season?
It's great, isn't it? Yeah, listen, it's absolutely hilarious. Today we were met by the news that Aidan McGeary is out for 12 weeks as well.
I don't think that's bad news.
So, no,
that's true, but it remains funny. Yeah, listen, Hibs have had a disastrous. I mean, apart from that, mind that pre-season friendly against Hartlepool, where the Hibs look quite good, so you've always got that to cling on to. But
we were class in 45 minutes against Clyde. You forgot about that.
Oh shit! So you were, yeah, when Deutsch scored a hat trick, of course.
Yeah,
it's not looking good for Hibs at all right now. I think even looking at the signings that have been made, there's a lot of question marks hanging over them, and you're thinking, well, you're adding that to a team that didn't do well last season, and now you're expecting guys like Jair Tavares, for example, coming in from, you know, second flight Portuguese football, and you're saying, we need you to start this season and be great. And that's a huge issue. Eli Yuan is another one that, obviously, because of red tape, he's not been able to really properly bleed himself into the team, get competitive minutes, whereby he's going to make a difference. Aidan McGeady obviously missed two penalties, hooked at half-time in a loss against Falkirk, and now he's broken his metatarsal in a friendly game. That is objectively very, very funny. So you've got to look at how Lee Johnson is going to sort of grab this squad by the scruff of the neck and say, we need to start this season well. We've got an Edinburgh derby in the second game of the season at Easter Road. You know, is it Tynecastle? I can't even remember.
It's Easter Road. Easter Road. It's Easter Road because our esteemed owner has been complaining about it.
There you go. So when you're a new manager coming into a club the size of Hibs, the last thing you want is a joke of a pre-season and sort of early competitive games. And unfortunately, that's what Lee Johnson has been handed. And you're going to disagree with me on this because of what happened after the Premier Sports Cup. Up until then, I liked kind of what I was hearing from Lee Johnson. He seems to have his head screwed on, and he seems to have an idea of what it takes to make Hibs a successful club. But as soon as adversity was thrown in his face, he's kind of collapsed a little bit. He's crumbled. He's a wet biscuit. So you're looking at various different ways where he can try and wrestle that back. But I mean, you could not have asked for a better opening day fixture than St Johnston. But to answer your question, the best Hibs can hope for this season is only losing by one goal in an Edinburgh derby as things stand.
Thanks for that, Rob. I'll maybe clip that if things change. But yeah, no, you're right. You're right about Johnson. What that didn't annoy me even after the loss against Falkirk, he came out and his analysis of what had gone wrong in the performance and calling the players out for it in a even-handed manner, not in a dismissive manner that maybe it was more akin to Mr. Lennon. But in his time, so I was like, well, that's actually quite refreshing and stuff. And then since then, it's been excuse making, and I'm not sure how having no fourth official was the reason why we didn't get the job done against Greenock Morton. But there we go. Andy, what's your thoughts on Hibs this season as a neutral?
Yeah, no more to add really, other than the derbies will be 2-0 draws and 2 very low scoring Hearts wins. That's what you're getting.
Yeah, fair enough.
Andy, you're assuming there's going to be 4 Edinburgh derbies this season.
Yeah, you're right. It might just be 3. You're right. Probably will just be 3, let's be honest.
Okay, before we go back to Rob on Hearts, Andy, what's your opinion on is for this season where it seems that almost I think a lot of Scottish football fans are just assuming that Hearts are third this season, but is third more important than a cup for Hearts, but primarily for Robbie Nielsen?
Yeah, it's difficult this, isn't it? Because I would always there was a bit of chat about this in our WhatsApp group last night. For me as a fan, it's always a cup above anything else. Like, you don't forget, like, when we won the Challenge Cup, I don't remember really what league position it was, kind of middle of the table, but it didn't really matter. You just don't want to be relegated or anything kind of like that. But for Nielsen and Hearts, it's slightly different. I think for Nielsen, the cup is probably more important. I think he's lost 2 Scottish Cup finals, and I think when you're looking at legacy, and I don't know if Nielsen cares about it or not, but I think if he does care about legacy, you'll remember the cups in 20 years' time, and you will remember the finishing third in the league and everything else. But I think that, you know, so I guess if a recent example is Derek McInnes. I think for me, Aberdeen fans will remember the cup win, the league cup win over the second place finishes, which were good, but because it's a league season, they've got ups and downs, and ultimately you finish second and you get in Europe. But there's not the same sense of celebration that there is with that and euphoria that there is with a cup win. So for me, for Nielsen, I think for his legacy at Hearts and to be remembered even more fondly, I think it's a cup win, especially given how difficult, now that Rangers and Celtic are back, that it is to win it. I think that would be the thing for him. For Hearts, it's slightly more complicated, I think, because there's the financial perspective of finishing third, because there's the kind of cachet of finishing third to attract better players, and obviously getting back into Europe. And I think, you know, finishing third gives them a better chance of staying in Europe past Christmas, which happens so rarely for teams outside of Rangers and Celtic, and actually really just Rangers these days. But obviously they haven't won a cup in basically over a decade now. So I don't know. It's a bit more complicated for Hearts, I think. Rob will probably give me a better idea, but I think there is a chance that it's two slightly different perspectives this season in terms of who would be happiest with what. And again, like you say, you're kind of also assuming that Hearts are going to get third, but I don't know. It's a wee bit. I think it depends on the perspective. I think for Hearts this season.
Yeah, I was going to say trying to be as neutral as possible. I suppose the third place, whilst it does get you money and the possibility of Europe, it doesn't, you know, if it goes on your honours on your website or whatever, then you're a bit of a loser club, to be honest, if you're putting stuff like that up. But on the flip side to that is that the ability to go 2 seasons in a row with 6 games in Europe, big trips for fans, fingers hopefully for fans, and all that is potential to be game-changing in a way that the kind of money, European money has for Celtic and Rangers, in the sense of being able to widen that gulf further between the rest of the clubs, and it has been repeated in lots and lots of smaller leagues, is that if Hearts can essentially become the third force by dint of hoovering up this money, then that's a huge sort of game-changing thing. But again, the history of Hearts and getting financial injections of money doesn't necessarily guarantee success. It's twice in living memory that where they've wasted money on people like Goran Petric and the like. So that is kind of my kind of conflicted on it, because there's no guarantee of success, whereas people always do remember the cup wins. But let's go to a man who will probably be able to give us much better insight on that, and that's Rob.
You don't get an open top bus parade for third place, man. I'd take a cup every single day of the week above finishing third. I think that the way that the Scottish Premiership is now, fifth gets you European football. If you want to play in Europe, finish fifth. That's fine. All you need to do is win a cup. And listen, for Robbie Nielsen, I think that is exactly the same. He's not Joe Savage. He's not Ann Budge or whoever is going to be in charge of the club who's looking at finances. For his own legacy, you do not become a legendary manager unless you win a trophy. You don't become a great manager unless you win a trophy. It just doesn't happen. Craig Levein got Hearts to two consecutive third place finishes in the early noughties. Who cares? He didn't win a trophy. It doesn't matter. What matters?
Whoa. Can we go back to this? Are you saying that Craig Levein has never won a trophy? Wow.
He's been gone for ages, mate. You don't need to pedal that one out again. We all know it. But Robbie Nielsen, for him and for Hearts, for the fans, for the club, for everyone involved, what is more important is winning a trophy or trophies plural. That's what makes you a great manager. That's what people care about. And you know, as much as a third place finish gives you the money, the financial backing, the oomph to go and do a little bit more further down the line, it's not as cool or as fun as winning a trophy. And like Andy said, when the Rovers won the Challenge Cup, even when they won the sort of League Cup, you know, who cares about where they finished? What you remember is the cup win. And it's the same as when Hearts won the cup in 2012, we finished fifth. I couldn't care less. Paulo Sergio was a pretty average manager in terms of Scottish Premiership standards, but he won a trophy. So he's now seen as a Hearts legend. That's what Robbie Nielsen wants. That's what any manager would want. And I think that's what Hearts will be hopefully looking to do this season, especially, you know, not win the League Cup since the 1960s. I'd like that to change. And I think that Hearts are currently in a better position than they have been in a long time to try and change that this season. So why not? I think that should be the first aim. But yeah, it's more important for Nielsen. It's more important for the fans. It's not more important for the club. And I think that's where the slight sort of change comes in.
Yeah, a bit of tension, but it's all good. Dundee United now, without Sons, the only team from Scotland's fourth city this season in the Premiership. Have they signed well, given the transformation that's happened over the summer? Or have they signed a bunch of injury-prone superstars? Rob, what's your... Is it as binary as that?
I really enjoyed how Jack Ross, when he was unveiled, actually had a ruptured Achilles tendon. So that tells you everything you need to know about signing Crocs. No, listen, I think Dundee United are the dark horses for third this season. Well, we were talking there as if Hearts finishing third's a certainty. I don't think it is. I think that Hearts are going to be playing Thursday, Sunday throughout the likes of September and October and into November. Dundee United, I'm not sure they will get that far in Europe. You never know. It looks like they're going to be playing AZ Alkmaar in the playoff game. So listen, I think Dundee United have signed well. I think Stephen Fletcher, he's got an injury track record, but also he is exactly what Tony Watt needs to flourish. We saw what Tony Watt was capable of at Motherwell, and I think that Stephen Fletcher will be the absolutely, you know, perfect foil for him to go and sort of make a difference there as well. Dylan Levitt coming in is just a phenomenal signing. It baffles me that no one else was looking to try and sign him, because he was just so influential in the middle of the park for Dundee United last season. Aziz Behic has come in, the Australian international. I don't know about his injury track record, if I'm being totally honest, but again, he comes with a bit of calibre and a bit of pedigree. And Mark Birigiti in goals as well, another Australian, another international. So I think they've signed well. I think that what Jack Ross showed at his time during his time at Hibs is that, yeah, you know, it's not going to be sexy, expansive football the whole time, but he's going to get the job done. He's going to get you into positive positions in the league table. And he's going to do it in a way of, you know, he's cast in the same mould, I think, as Robin Nielsen and Derek McInnes, in that he knows how to get teams playing to a standard that will get them to a position that he wants them to be in. So I think, you know, the way I'm looking at it, United have signed well. They've not signed loads, but they've signed well in what they've done. And I think that they will get busier as the window goes on. I think with, you know, Tony Asghar and all that, they're going to be looking for the best deals for the club. And that usually means waiting until towards the end of a transfer window as well. So, yeah, I think Dundee United are going to be good this season. And I think that they should be looking upwards from where they finished last season, which is saying something, because only Hearts finished above them as well as Rangers and Celtic.
Yeah. I think the question's slightly harsh, because I had a look at the players they'd signed. Sybil missed, obviously, a fair bit of last season. But he's only 27 and played a lot the season before. Levitt had a few knocks as well, but he still started 18 league games and he's only 21. So he's not really had a lot of kind of adult football experience. So it's kind of understandable in a sense that he would be suffering a few knocks in a long season. And the other guys who signed, obviously Stephen Fletcher, I thought, oh, maybe he's missed a whole bunch of games for Stoke. But I think he started most games for them and managed to score kind of 9 goals. And then Behic, who obviously didn't know at all, we played 34 games in the Turkish League. So for me, it seems a wee bit harsh to suggest that they might be a team full of crocs. I think they've, like Rob says, I mean, I feel that we're agreeing a lot on this podcast, but they seem to have signed on paper smartly and just kind of been sensible about who they've brought in, rather than just splashing a lot of cash and all sorts of different people like Hibs. So yeah, I think it's okay. I think the guys who signed are smart, and you never know with injuries. Who can tell? But I don't think you get somebody like Sybil and think, oh, this guy's guaranteed to be injured all season. I think he's had injuries, him and Levitt, but nothing that suggests that he's guaranteed to kind of be out for the rest of the next season.
So speaking of clubs that want to outdo what they did last season, do we think that Celtic will be even better in Ange Postecoglou's second season in charge? We have longer, David Turnbull will be back, and the January signings will be have had a rest, which is part of the issue that why we didn't necessarily see them fully embedded last season. Andy, how do you feel about Celtic's chances this season? Do we expect them to do better in Europe, I suppose? Is that at least a bare minimum?
Yeah, certainly. I think when it comes to Europe, they need to do better. And it'll be interesting to see what they do in Europe. I think when Rodgers was in, and obviously that was kind of the recent high point of Celtic domestically, up until Postecoglou came in, he was pretty poor at adapting his approach for Europe, in terms of that he still kept Celtic quite open and were often quite easy to score against. And I think Postecoglou had a couple of games into it the last season, or he did have obviously a few games last season in terms of Europe. I just mean after he brought a few of his kind of January signings, and for me, he felt like he was too open as well. Like he kind of, the principles that he had for the Premiership were still the same ones he was using in Europe. And it'll be interesting to see this season if he adapts slightly to more of an approach that Rangers took, and kind of be a bit more solid at the back and be a bit more focused on counter-attacking. So that'll be interesting. And you would like to think they'd be better this season. They should be better in Europe this season, but it's not always worked out for Celtic when it comes to Europe. So we'll see. Certainly in the league they should be. I think having had this summer to have a break, and also to get used to exactly what Postecoglou wants to do, should have helped. There's not been a lot of turnover, and I think that's important as well. They've a few guys have left that really should have left, and they've only really brought in a couple of people to, like Aaron Moy, to it seems like bolster the squad, given that they'll be playing a couple of games a week. I would expect Celtic to be better this season. The fact that Rangers should be on their tail all season as well should mean that they both kind of try to outmatch each other all year, and that you wouldn't imagine there'd be too much of a drop off. I wonder if the issue might be keeping consistency over the whole season and also keeping fit. I think that's maybe going to be the challenge. The other thing might be the World Cup, and I have to say I'm not sure in terms of who's all going to the World Cup from Celtic. But if there's a few guys going, there's maybe a potential that come February, March time that there's maybe injuries and people flagging who otherwise would have been all right. So that would be the other thing. Maybe also keeping Matt O'Reilly. I see there's been some chat about whether or not he's going to stay and that some teams in the Premier League are keeping tabs of him. I thought he was great when he came in, certainly in patches last season, and I'd like to see a full season of him. So maybe keeping him would make a difference. But yeah, I they should be. And the short answer is that yes, they should be better than last season, certainly.
Rob, your thoughts on Celtic for this season?
Yeah, they're going to be annoyingly good again, unfortunately. And it does piss me off because they're quite entertaining to watch as well, so it's like it's not as if I can hate them. Like a sort of a good Neil Lennon Celtic team would be easy to hate. I find it kind of hard to hate this Celtic team. They've got players, you know, Andy's already mentioned him, Matt O'Reilly I think is brilliant, Furuhashi and Maeda, really enjoy watching them play, Rio Hatate. I think it was important for him to get a little bit of time off really, because he did seem to tire towards the end of the season. You've got Jota, who's just a phenomenal winger for this standard of football. And you brought in like Alexandro Bernabei, for example, from Lanús. And I think that he looks exciting as well. You know, he's all action. He seems like a bit of a hothead, loves to get forward. And again, you know, what could potentially be seen as like a problem position for Celtic, with obviously Greg Taylor really growing into the role at left back last season, you've now got this exciting young Argentinian who can step in there and play the Postecoglou way of football, which is obviously where he bases all of his signings from. Aaron Moy, I think, you know, he'll be a safe set of hands in the middle of the park. I think that he'll do what he's there to do. He understands the Postecoglou way of football, obviously having played under him in the national team. And, yeah, the permanent signing of Cameron Carton-Vickers and stuff as well. Yeah, listen, Celtic are a really, really strong side and a really good place. I think that Postecoglou came in a little bit too soon to... pardon me, a little bit too soon before European football last season to really get his ideas implemented in time for them to make a difference in European competition. But because Celtic won the league, I believe they go straight into the Champions League group stage. So again, you know, you've already got six glamour games against huge European opponents in which you can try and expand your way of football and sort of show that on a European stage as well. So listen, if I was a Celtic fan, I'd be like a Cheshire cat just now. I think I'd be buzzing ahead of this season that's coming up. I think the signings that they have made, very good, very important signings, guys that obviously the fans were thirsting over, like Carter Vickers and Jota to come back in. Benjamin Segrist, he signed too, just a backup goalkeeper. But yeah, listen, they've strengthened whilst maintaining the core of their squad. So I think that I would not be worried in the slightest if I was of the green and white persuasion.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. But again, I suppose they're by going straight into the Champions League, they are avoiding the stress that is trying to qualify for it as well, which is obviously adds an uncertainty to the start of your season. So our final question of tonight's pod before we get out of here is Aberdeen, who have free spending Aberdeen, I suppose you say. Andy, you saw Aberdeen play against your team last weekend. Has Jim Goodwin sorted Aberdeen's defence, or will a higher standard of opposition, with no offence to Raith Rovers and your other group members in the Premier Sports Cup, will they prove to be a bit more challenging for Aberdeen, seeing that he's jettisoned much of the defence over the summer?
Well, yeah, I think that's the crucial point in this, and he's got rid of Bates and Gallagher and also Considine. And certainly those first two were a major reason why they were so bad last season. Anybody you would think is going to be a step up on them. And I think in terms of their centre-halves, I think they look like they might have. I think Liam Scales has looked good in the cup games, and obviously you're up against inferior opposition that maybe aren't capable or don't want to press you as much, but he looked good coming out from the back with the ball and kind of starting moves off, and I think that's partly why they've got him, is that he is capable of being a bit of a ball playing centre half. And I think alongside him, Anthony Stewart's come in and kind of taking the captaincy, and although he's not a big guy, he's not a tall guy, he's quite physically imposing, and I think he offers that sort of the balance to the defence that maybe Liam Scales doesn't have quite the physicality that Stewart does, and likewise Stewart's maybe not quite as good on the ball as Scales is. So I think potentially that combination might be a good one. They've obviously got Kelly Roos in as well. It's kind of harder to judge from a goalkeeping point of view, but Joe Lewis has been on the slide for a wee while, so bringing in somebody new is not necessarily a bad call. Where I was more worried about Aberdeen was down the right flank, where they had Jaden Richardson, who I thought was pretty terrible against us, certainly in the first half, where he was out of position a lot. He seemed to be caught out quite a lot. He allowed a lot of crosses to come in from our left, who was like Liam Dick and Dario Zanata, neither of whom have been in form recently. Liam Dick is generally not that great, but they both got quite a bit of joy down that side, and I think that would potentially be the concern for me, is that they maybe are a wee bit weaker in the fullback position than they have been in the past, while potentially upgrading the centre half pair. I think alongside that, the how it works in the middle of the park is going to have an impact as well. So I think if the fullbacks are maybe poorer, or the fullbacks are kind of bombing on all the time and are leaving space at the back, how does Ross McCrory, how does Ramandani, how do they work together to potentially mitigate some of those issues? So I was not hugely impressed by Aberdeen, I have to say, against us. I thought they ceded possession quite a lot, and I think there's maybe some concerns, certainly defensively. But like I say, there's the centre half pair, and I've got potential. Otherwise, maybe there's weaknesses that other better teams can exploit.
Rob, is the perennial problem with building your defence around a Celtic loanee, as good as Liam Scales is, he's going to be, if you have a good season, he's going to be missing for at least four games against Celtic, and if you draw them in the cup, that you're also weakened. Is that an issue for Jim Goodwin?
Yeah, but I mean, it's also an issue in the fact that he's not your player. So if he does have a good season, he's going to be hard to replace next time out. And that's you know, I think a lot of Aberdeen fans are getting a little bit peeved at the signings on loan from Celtic. And obviously they had a few of them over the past couple of years. But if you look at it realistically, and I know that this is a bit defeatist, but it's like, how often are you going to be expecting to get a great result at Parkhead, for example? And will Liam Scales be the difference between a win, a draw, or a loss at Pittodrie? If that is the case, then you are too reliant on a young defender. And I think that within itself is an issue. I think just looking at it, you know, Jim Goodwin said, that back line doesn't work, so I'm going to sign an entire new one and see what happens. And I like that, to be honest with you. He's basically just said, nah, fuck it. Let's bring in Anthony Stewart, let's bring in Liam Scales, Hayden Coulson, Jaden Richardson, all the stars have arrived at Pittodrie.
Is the bigger achievement getting money for David Bates?
I mean, I assume he has the same agent as Oliver Burke.
Yeah.
Getting punted around European teams for good money. I mean, that is remarkable. But also, though, again, that means that Aberdeen are probably going to have to sign another new defender, because that leaves a hole in the depth for centre-half, because as much as Ross McCrory can fill in a gap at right-back, at centre-half, you want him to be playing in his best position, which is probably going to be the centre of the park, alongside the likes of Conor Barron, Ramadani, all these guys. So, yeah, it means that Aberdeen are probably going to... But the fact that Legia Warsaw are probably going to pay £200,000 for... Just say that again, £200,000... for David Bates is utterly remarkable. It means that they can probably sign an even better defender than the ones they've already signed in this window. But I think more generally, looking at Aberdeen, the back line will need time to gel. I think that the start of the season might be a little bit difficult for them. They might ship goals, but at the same time, you know, these are guys that you're bringing in because you know they can make a difference. Richardson has a high ceiling, obviously a very promising young fullback. Hayden Coulson spent his time at Middlesbrough. Obviously, Wilder doesn't want him there. So Jim Goodwin wants to work with him again. I think you've known him from his time at St Mirren. I'm not sure. Anthony Stewart has come in and taken the armband straight away, which tells you how key a component he's going to be. And again, the promising Liam Scales at the back as well. So it's definitely all good players. It's just whether they gel in time for a matter of hours, Duncan, until the season starts.
Well, there you have it. We've done it. All 12 clubs, the key question about them, each of them answered by this panel of experts that we've assembled. Guys, how excited are we now feeling about the league camp starting on Saturday?
I was excited anyway, man. I'm a Hearts fan. I'm fine. How are you feeling?
That's ask me again at 4:45 on Saturday as to how I feel about this coming season. But no, it's going to be fun.
I've got a feeling your phone's going to ring out, Duncan, at that time.
Well, anyway, Rob and Andy, thank you very much for being part of today's bonus podcast. If you've liked what you've heard or disagreed, don't tell. If you like what you heard, tell people about it. If you don't like what you've heard, then don't tell anyone. That's the best thing to do, I've heard. But we appreciate your support. We've got lots of things planned for the coming season. So thanks again for being with us. And just thanks again, Rob and Andy.
Thank you.
Cheers, man.
And we'll see you all again on Monday, bright and breezy, when we review the first weekend of SPL Premiership action for season 22-23. Take care and enjoy your football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.